Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse has opened in theaters, so let's talk some spoilers. Hi, my name is Sean, and I love to talk about movies and TV way too much. With that in mind, go ahead and join me down below in the comment section. Share your spoiler-packed thoughts on Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. If you haven't seen the movie yet, go watch the movie, then come back and join the conversation here. No need for spoiler warnings down below in the comment section. It's a spoiler review. It's in the title and the thumbnail. They have been warned. You have been warned if you haven't watched the movie yet. Also, I got chapter markers down below so you can skip ahead to whatever topic you want to hear me discuss. And normally, when I do one of these spoiler reviews, I've seen the movie 2 times. Some stuff in real life has been going on to where I haven't been able to make it to the theater a second time, and I won't be able to for a variety of different reasons. Apologize for that. In theory, that will make this a shorter spoiler review, and it won't be 90 minutes long, but I think that every time. Let's see what happens. The movie kicks off with a cold open where we go to Gwen's Earth and get a peek into her life and the struggles that she's been facing. And just right out of the gate, they went for it with the animation. There's just so many things kind of going on here where they're like layering images, where she's seeing things in reflections. They're using different animation styles to where you just immediately go, oh, this is different from what you normally see. Where they're able to kind of communicate what she's thinking about, what she's feeling through the animation in ways that if you try to do it in live action, I just don't know that it would translate because live action is obviously real. It's a real thing, and your brain doesn't accept certain types of imagery and things where you start fiddling with it, but you can get away with it in animation, and you just go along with it because there's more of a gap between reality and animation. Obviously, it's right out of the gate doing this really cool stuff. It's an interesting thing that I thought this was just me when I watched it, but at the intro of this movie, I thought the theater was just really quiet. Like the volume was bad and like maybe someone was going to go talk to the attendants to turn the volume up. But the music was still pretty loud, like these loud drums and bass while there's like this quiet monologue going on. And I thought that was just my experience. But over on Twitter last night, it became very obvious that this was a very common issue that people were having with the volume in particular at the beginning of this film being wacky as can be, where the overall volume felt low, music felt too loud, and dialogue was much too soft for many of our ears. And so I would have mentioned that in my review, except I thought it was just me, but it wasn't. This is a very common phenomena of people having trouble hearing in particular at the beginning of this movie. Fascinating. My wife, her interpretation was it was intentional because of the way that it was kind of this reflective thing that was supposed to create this sense of distance of like we're discussing things and rehashing what's happened in the past. And so it played a little different. So we go into our story and you really get the Spider-Man mythos applied to Gwen and setting up so many of the themes of this movie, the ties to the lore, the frustrations of the spider experience of you're alone, that there's all these people that you love, that you can't tell them the truth, and you don't know how they'll respond if you do tell them the truth. And there's this tension of people are out to get you while you're trying to do the right thing, and there's misunderstandings. And you see Gwen's version of that that seems particularly tragic as one of her key death events was her Peter Parker turns into the Lizard and she's part responsible for the death of her best friend. That was part of that journey that caused her to become the hero, but also creates this lost tragedy and regret. And they build in her father into the story of his daughter's best friend was killed by Spider-Woman, our Spider-Person. There's just so many layers to the complexity of that tragedy, of that dynamic, and the loneliness that would come with that. And that sets the stage for this entire movie that's just very melancholy. It's very somber and sad. It has so many jokes, lively moments, amazing, like, Easter eggs, the cameos, all of that. You have the lighthearted aspects, but also so much of it is just drenched in sadness at the same time, which is kind of fascinating the way it balances that, and it feels right. It doesn't feel like it's hopping between tones, just captures that Spider-Man energy. And so then the plot really starts to kick in for her little journey, this cold open, where she's battling a version of the Vulture that's clearly from a different dimension. And once again, you just see the animation play going on here. There's a distinct style of drawing for the world of Gwen. And then this Renaissance Vulture shows up that talks different, but also is drawn like this Renaissance drawing style, hand drawn on, you know, paper or whatever, early paper or whatever. It was cool and interesting to look at. And you could put those two wildly different styles right next to each other because it's animation, and just all kind of right in here, you start setting up the pieces of this story of the multiverse is still broken, that this is one of the threats that's going to go along with this. And through the adventure, Spider-Man 2099 shows up, Spider-Woman shows up, and they capture this person. She's kind of introduced to what's going on through the process. Her dad gets her into sights. She reveals who she is to him, and he rejects her. He responds as the police officer, not the father. And in that moment, he fails the test. He responds poorly. And like, you can think about the complexities of real life. He's having to process a lot of things all in a moment. She's had all this information all along. And so he responds poorly. He makes the wrong choice in the moment. And she responds like a young person runs, but also like a young person to realize that she doesn't have the foresight to see, realize that that was him in a moment of weakness, that him is still processing and he failed the test. That doesn't necessarily define where he'll be a day from now, 2 days, a week, a month. And so in that rejection, she runs and joins this multiverse task force. And so you kind of set the intrigue of what's going on with this Spider-Man 2099, what's going on with the multiverse. You set up the relationship with Gwen and her father, and you set up the themes about the loneliness, these core events, all of it kind of put right here in the cold open, very efficiently, very effectively, also while showing all of these creative, interesting, different animation styles. Just a very efficient cold open, very long cold open, but then again, it's a very long, robust film with a lot going on. But just a lot in there, done very effectively. Next up, let's talk about The Spot, the main villain of our story in one sense. In another sense, I would argue that Spider-Man 2099 is our main antagonist. I don't know if he's a villain yet. I guess I'll find out next March, but he's certainly the main antagonist driving a lot of this. But our main villain in the film is The Spot. And I thought one of the things that was really fun about the character is that he's introduced as this fairly innocuous villain of the week, doing something pretty minor. He's just stealing an ATM, which I've never stolen an ATM, so I don't mean to suggest that that's not a crime that needs to be stopped, but he's not trying to blow up a building, take over the city, mutate people, or any of the other wild, crazy things that normally our Spider-Man, Spider-Villains are trying to do. He's not doing all that stuff. And even as he's saying things like, this is my existence, I can't hold a job when I've got all these spots and holes and portals and stuff, I can't do it. And so it has this little moment where, you know, seems simple enough what he's doing. And he's in the trailers, and you think, okay, just kind of throw away little villain guy here. And it keeps escalating from there. I thought that was fascinating, the way they take someone that he doesn't seem that menacing, that evil at the beginning, and keep growing him. Other weird thing about this, not the observation as I was watching it, this is our second character in a comic book movie this year making jokes about their holes, which seems like such a specific joke, where we had it in Spider-Man Quantumania. And it's also the second time a joke that seems really specific has been repeated. So in Quantumania, you have a character who's, how many holes do you have? It's this whole joke about how many holes do you have. And then also in that joke, there's Broccoli Head. In Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, they did, what is it, Carrot Head? they copied a joke from Quantumania in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, this joke about people's heads being a vegetable. And then in this movie, you have another guy making jokes about his holes, like the guy in Quantumania. So, like, seems like a weird number of, like, really specific jokes coming out of Quantumania. Maybe we didn't give Quantumania enough credit for how influential it would be on throwaway jokes in comic book movies in the year 2023. Anyway, I digress. But you have this character introduced just stealing an ATM to get by. His motivation seems innocent enough. And as you go throughout the movie, he's like, actually, Spider-Man, you created me. And then they have this fight, and it seems keeps being feeling lighthearted until this guy gets sucked into himself, stuck in his portals, and it's like he keeps escalating as he realizes his power, as he realizes what he can do, as he sees these other dimensions. Suddenly, like, his vengeance grows, his anger grows, and he just, like, spirals in the insanity of that. To by the end of the movie, he's like, I'm going to kill all of your family, Spider-Man. I'm going to find them all, and they're all going to die. You go, whoa. ATM guy got really angry. ATM guy, this escalated a whole lot. And I thought it was fascinating the way they could take a villain and have him feel one way at the beginning. And by the end of it, you're like, oh, crap, this is bad. This is going to mess things up and is causing all of this to unravel. Of course, the other thing that happens in here is when Spot gets sucked into himself and he's just looking into portals, they just have this fun little moment where they open into a portal and we're in the shop in Venom. And the lady's like totally unfazed by this animated person coming through a portal because she's been messing around with Venom for a while and been taken over by Venom. And just, I thought it was fascinating the way that, like, or not fascinating, so fun. Like, you get right out of the gate in this movie, like, we're going for it. We're having all sorts of little hopping around from everything. And I was like, you know, I believe at this point in time in the movie, we'd already hopped into Lego world where we literally are in stop motion Lego Spider-Man world watching stuff happen. It's right out of the gate. You're going, wait a minute, this is what I thought Multiverse of Madness was going to be last year. But instead, Multiverse of Madness was pizza in a bowl, stop on green, go on red, totally like missing the actual possibilities of Multiverse of Madness. And this movie, when it's just doing the throwaway little jokes at the beginning, before we even go off and get wild with all of this, we're doing that portal hopping ways that makes sense. It feels organic and it works. Maybe some of that is animation, once again, is more forgiving for doing some of this wacky stuff and tonal shifts and everything. And so it plays better. But this Spider-Verse film, this Multiverse film, delivered the Multiverse of Madness that a bunch of us thought maybe we were going to get last year, and lives up to that title much better than this one. Other thing in our first third of the film, we have Miles, and we're realizing his struggle, the classic Spider-Man struggle that Gwen had in the cold open, that Peter Parker's always have, and Miles has the two lives, where he's trying to be Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibilities, trying to do that and be the hero. And it's taking an enormous toll on his personal lives, where he's lying to the people that he loves. They don't understand what's going on with him. And he's missing out on things that matter. And so they have this whole bit where he's, you know, trying to get to his dad's promotion party. And in the process is messing up the cake, solving crimes and stuff. And his parents know something's not right. The principal, guidance counselor, whoever it was, is like, you know your son is lying to you, right? Don't you? And they know something's up, but they don't know what it is. And so you kind of spends a lot of time establishing that. And I'd be interested in, like, do a comparison. It felt like this movie had a very long first act where it feels like it takes a while for things really kind of kick into high gear. Like, it's all established very early, kind of what's going on, the ideas here. And we're introduced to our villain and we realize he's very important. But it doesn't feel like we kick into high gear for a little while. And I'm wondering if by comparison of times of when events happen in movies, how much that compares to other blockbusters of this length versus how much of it as an animated film, we're just so unused to them going into characters' lives and not kind of microwaving some of this stuff, but really sitting there, setting up Miles and his parents' relationship, his struggles, and all of these different things. I'm fascinated to see how some of that compares, but it's like it feels like it's setting a lot of stuff up here so it can pay off really well later on. But also, if you think about it, it's a part one of two. This is a 4-hour movie, 4.5, 5-hour movie, in which case, if you spend a long time setting everything up, it's still just a time appropriate amount for how much story you're actually telling with all of this. Eventually, Gwen shows up, and so they kind of go off, start hanging out. He needs an escape. He's been grounded, but he still kind of goes off with her. And you already kind of had some feeling something was a little bit fishy here, because even when she was recruited in the cold open, 2099 was like, not her, not her. You know why? You know why? And then while she's swinging around with Miles, she's like hooking cameras up and stuff. And you're like, what's going on with all of this? Feels like there's kind of something a little bit more going on here. And you're trying to figure out all the, like the details of it, but something feels fishy. Something's not quite right with whatever's going on here. So things eventually do kick into motion, and we hear through communication things kind of going on as Gwen is trying to like investigate the stuff that she's there for involving the spot, and realizes that things are not going well. And then she's communicating and they're like, you better fix this. And then it's made obvious that she's not supposed to be talking with Miles. She's like, never going to do it again. And Miles has been following her, starts to hear some of this where he's overhearing half the conversation. Where she's like, okay, I'll never see him again. I'll stay away from him. And she has to open a portal to kind of chase after Spock to try and fix everything. And Miles decides to follow her. And once again, where we start doing multiverse of madness in the way that some of us thought this other movie was going to do it, because you just hop into this whole other world. It's wild, crazy adventures and very wildly different version of our Spider-Man that's a lot of fun to be with. And through the adventure that kind of takes place here, there's an incident where someone's in danger. Gwen sees it. Miles is like, I'll go rescue that person. And she's like, you can't. You'll die. And he's like, no, I bet I can make it happen. And so he swings in and saves this person. Classic Spider-Man save. And you immediately start to feel like something's not quite right here. Once again, like, what's kind of going on here? What are we missing and everything going on? And there's like people coming out to try and repair rifts and holes. I'm like, what is this? Building that intrigue. That's where like we have a story that very early on does things that like tickle your brain just a little bit. Give you that itch. And it keeps giving a little bit more and a little bit more. And it scratches it a little bit, but then it creates a little bit more of an itch. So you keep being intrigued. You keep paying attention, waiting like, what's going to happen? What's kind of going on here? It's what this movie does really well. It takes a long time for everything to fully kick into motion, but it keeps teasing things. It keeps making you go, wait a minute, what does that mean? Where's that going? What's Gwen up to? Why don't they want her? Why don't they want Miles? And it raises those questions that you actually want answers to. So while maybe the plot's not takes a while to get going, there's something keeping you very engaged and interested. And of course, the whole movie is very funny and entertaining at the same time. And it's amazing animations. There's all these things that you like love to check out, but always having something in there that's reminding you back to what the story's really about, where we're really going with all of this. Even if it is the longest Hollywood-released animated film of all time, while only being half of the story. But always kind of keeps hooking you and pulling you back in. So after this, whatever happens, we end up going to Multiverse Command, whatever it's called, and Miles finally gets to go check out whatever this thing is that Gwen has been working for. He seems super excited to go there and steps into this realm, and she'd said, oh, it's kind of an elite squad. It's only like a handful of us. And then he shows up, and immediately it's like, this is not a handful of people. By any estimation, this is a lot. This is an enormous, countless number of spider people, which also immediately just opened the doors to all kinds of fun Easter eggs. The gigantic standout one, I thought, in my mind, Donald Glover, as the Prowler. And if you don't remember this, he was in Spider-Man Homecoming. He's playing Miles's uncle, in Spider-Man Homecoming. He's just in a parking garage that gets interrogated. Spider-Man attaches him to a car. And it was kind of like an odd role for someone of his fame to have this one scene. And so you've just been kind of wondering, is that going somewhere? Are they ever going to pay that off? And they haven't until this moment. And maybe they'll continue to do something to pay it off in the future, because there's now discussions, language, or reports that Miles Morales live action movie's in the works. Not surprising. Sony loves to put out things with their Spider-Man catalog that they have. And Miles is becoming a very mainstream character, as this movie's opening weekend numbers are clearly indicating. But they have him as the Prowler. And so it's a tie back to Spider-Man Homecoming. It's a tie back to the MCU. And you're seeing, in a sense, the MCU's Prowler in live action, in this animated movie, in this portal. And I keep finding ways to kind of come back to him and remind us of that little bit. But just like, so fun and interesting. And then we kind of go through this, and like, there's like, everything is a reference to something. The Easter egg videos, when this movie's on home video and you can go through and 4K zooming in and reference it, are going to be incredible. But, you know, they'll put a screen up and you'll see someone, you'll be like, oh, that's Insomniac. And it says Insomniac Spider-Man. Insomniac's the name of the company that created the Spider-Man PlayStation 4 game and is working on PlayStation 5 Spider-Man 2 with Spider-Man Miles Morales. Like, the current Spider-Man video games is right there. The video game is now in canon with this film, Insomniac Spider-Man. And they have all the animated shows. And then when they start discussing the canon events, like, you're seeing Andrew Garfield holding Gwen, you're seeing Uncle Ben from the Raimi films and Tobey Maguire, like, all of it. They're showing all of it. And it's so fun. It's so cool. You're like, they're doing it. They're like finding a way to pull this all together. And that's where I said the first Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse was the most comic book movie of all time. Just so comic booky. And this one doubles down on all of that. It's even more comic booky of just having fun with the lore and finding a plot that works great in animation that you can pull everything that we love together and make the story about the lore and about the commonalities that pulls it all together. That was so cool. That was so fun. There's so many little things in there that you can catch. So just a dream come true. And like, I'm watching with my kids and they're noticing, like, they keep elbowing me and they're like, Dad, look at that. It's Insomniac Spider-Man. Dad, look at that. Remember that? This leads to the big issue here. Canon events. And part of the canon is these certain key things where family members die, the captain dies, that always happens in the spider lore, wherever you're at. And their responsibility to kill these universes together is to make sure these canon events happen. And Miles and Miles's friends have either already faced these things, it's already happened, so they realize that's just part of it. Or in someone like Gwen's case, she's just kind of surrendered to it. She feels like she's already lost her father because he rejected her. And so she's kind of accepted it. She's not really dealing with the fact of, like, the reality of it. She's kind of moving on and allowing it to play out that her dad's going to die. But Miles doesn't, which leads to kind of the central conflict of these two parts of films, of the guy leading this organization, 2099. He's convinced that these canon events must take place. We must ensure that the canon is withheld. That's our job. And he seems like very remorseless about this. So I don't know where they're going with all of this. I assume we're going to have a lot of big twists, turns, reveals in the next part about what's really going on with 2099. What's his personal motivation, stakes in all of this, in particular why it's so targeted at Miles. And I assume it'll make a lot more sense as to why he has this very strict set of rules that don't seem to be the most heroic in nature, don't seem to be the most true to that Spider-Man attitude of, you know, Green Goblin holds up people and, what are you going to save, this is your love, or are you going to save all these strangers? And then Spider-Man says both, and he finds a way to do it. Classic Spider-Man, I'm not going to choose, I'm going to save everybody. And if I die in the process of trying to save everybody, that's what Spider-Man does. So we kind of, Miles is given this choice and he says, I can save everybody. I reject what you're saying. I'm not going to let my dad die. And he goes and we turns into this big fun spider chase of Miles on the run. His friends trying to pause to get him to talk with him. Not so happy with 2099 for handling it like a total jerk and doing it in such a callous fashion that of course he would respond poorly to. While at the same time, some of these other people are just more aggressively like, this guy's going to cause trouble. We need to catch him, arrest him and lock him up because he's going to cause trouble for everything kind of going on here. And immediately as this is happening, like you feel like this sinking in feeling of like betrayal that Miles's friends, once again, like happened in the first movie, have turned on him. And in this case, it's a very deep betrayal of this is the way that you're telling me my dad's going to die and you're not even going to let me try and save him. And you're treating me like the villain because I want to try and save my dad. What are you doing? What is happening here? As the fight escalates, 2099 reveals, and we learned before that the spider that bit him was from Earth 42. I don't know if that's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference, but it is central to this universe here as well. But Earth 42, spider was supposed to give them a Spider-Man. Instead, it got transported into Miles's universe. And then here, 2099 reveals, you were never supposed to be Spider-Man. You don't factor into all of this. You're the original anomaly. You're the original mistake. You're not Spider-Man. We're spider people, not you. And so harsh stuff. And then it's also revealed his friends already knew this. That's why they weren't supposed to see him. That's why all of this was kind of an issue. And once again, you feel that sense of betrayal turning on him. And in the moment, he's able to escape and get out of there. And he goes to the machine that kind of tests your DNA and then sends you back to your Earth. He hops into it, sends him off. And I assume where we're going with some of this is that there's something else that ties into 2099. The tragedy of 2099 probably goes back to something with Earth 42 not having a Spider-Man, Miles, all the anomalies, all this stuff happening. And we'll dive into like how 2099 is a ninja vampire, whatever that means. Wherever we're going with all of that, wherever this rage and anger that 2099 does not feel like a Spider-Man. Everyone else is funny. Everyone else is lighthearted. And then you have this angry, bitter person running it to try and save everything. But it doesn't seem heroic. It doesn't seem driven by anything that drives the other spider people. Which makes you wonder, like, why is everyone following this guy? Is he just like so convinced them of his lies? Or is the fear of everything? What is going on here that seems a bit odd that they're trusting this angry guy? And maybe he has a better side. When Peter B. Parker first walks away, he's a softy. So it seems like maybe he has a better side. We're just seeing the worst of him. But seems like something's going on here. In the aftermath of all of this, Gwen gets booted. 2099 doesn't trust her, so rips her multiverse privileges, sends her back to her Earth, which for her is her greatest fear. Because the biggest pain of her life is the rejection of her father. That the biggest, like this pain that she's a part of the reason that her best friend died. Not that she wanted her best friend to die. Horrible for her. And then when she reveals herself, when she's vulnerable to her father, he rejects her, pushes her away. Biggest pain of her life. So she has to go back and it leads to this, like she goes back to her father to see him and you have this great sequence, which once again, where they're just doing groundbreaking stuff with the animation where you're watching it and then you realize in the background, like the walls are dripping. They're melting behind her to communicate the emotion of everything that's going on. They've never seen anything like that in animation before. And it's entirely related to finding new ways to communicate, tell your story, draw emotion out of the audience, capture what's going on with every tool that you have. So they do something you can't really do in live action, without it coming off like you surrealist or anything like that. You just watch this and it plays totally normal, but there's all these new tools at their disposal and we've never seen something like that, but it was so cool. But they kind of go through this long kind of back and forth of each of them starting to accept each other. Even in her father's sense of like, you rejected me too. Like you lied to me. Like you didn't tell me the truth. And all of a sudden I'm told the truth. And then I don't respond wonderfully to realizing you've been lying to me for 2 years and processing all you left. You left and you didn't come back. You didn't talk to me like the next day, a week later when I had time to process. Like you left too. Both of them rejected the other person. Both of them failed the test. Now a teenager failing the test is more reasonable than an adult failing the test, but the teenager left, so he didn't have an opportunity to respond better, and he begins to respond better in this interaction. And as you go throughout the conversation, part of even her fear is that he's going to die. And then he says, I resigned. I'm not the captain anymore. Light bulb goes off in her head. Wait a minute. All that stuff about these canon events being mandatory or else the universe collapses, that doesn't seem true. There's other options on the table here. I need to go save my friend. And I haven't talked about him in here. Spider-Punk, Hobie, her friend. Just another fun character. Fun spin on Spider-Man. And then another just fun way to show animation. He, being a punk, with a punk aesthetic, as soon as things start getting real totalitarian, he quits. I don't want anything to do with it. I'm out of here. And even like he's given all these reasons for why he's even part of the man like to watch it. But so he leaves her gift of his deal so that she can portal jump. And she's going to go to Miles. That'll bring us to the final little stretch of our film where Miles returns somewhere. And he used the DNA machine to get sent back to his Earth. And like those little details when a movie sets things up properly, giving you the right pieces of information, the right ways to like, that makes sense in the context when you're first hearing it, but also pay off so well later on. There's no reason that you would piece it together when you're just along for the ride of the movie. But you're watching this movie and he goes back and he's like, I've got to tell my parents. I got to try and save them. I'm going to finally be honest. And he goes to his mother, tells her the truth that he's Spider-Man. And she's confused. And you're watching it thinking she's in denial. Like, does she just not know something? Like, what's going on here? Like, this is... And then she keeps on being in denial, keeps on not knowing what he's talking about. What's kind of going on here? Like, what? This is kind of strange. This is a bit overdone. And then he glitches. And you go, wait a minute, where is he? Where is he at? wait a minute. Is he not on? He's glitched. You only glitch when you're not on. Oh, and it like sinks in. Fantastic twist. Because it makes sense in the story. They gave us all of the pieces that we could have pieced this together. And the way they reveal it is once again, us piecing it together. Now they do have a line of dialogue that explains what's happening in case you didn't catch it. But if you've been watching these movies and paying attention, they did it in a way that you could, as you get information, as things are revealed, you as the audience member can tie it together. And you're watching. Why does his mother not know who he is? And he glitches. Because there's not a Spider-Man on this place. Wait. When you're bit by the radioactive spider, it messes with your DNA. That's part of the Spider-Man lore. And he used a device that uses your DNA to return you home. And you already told us because this thing happened, there's not a Spider-Man. Oh, whoa. Oh, and you just piece it all together. Fantastic twist. Like when you're thinking like, what a great, not like end of the movie, turn it on its head. You know, the Sixth Sense, not those types of plot twists, but like you're watching through a movie and you just have a twist and a turn that is just like throws you off, but feels like you earned that. Like, I wasn't looking for that. I wasn't paying attention to that. But you set that up properly. So well. And you distracted me. It was a great magic trick. I didn't see it when it was happening. Well done. Well done. They tricked me. In the best way possible. And so then Miles, his uncle walks in. And you realize, oh, his dad's already dead here. And his uncle's still alive. And they go up on the roof. Something happens to Miles. He gets knocked out, wakes up, And Miles is like saying all this stuff about different Earths and you're the Prowler and you all this stuff. And then the Prowler walks up. And if you're like me, you probably are. Okay, I see where this is going. This Earth Prowler is Miles. And so then they takes the mask off and it's Miles. And you're like, there it is. They pulled that thing off. Okay. All right. This is getting interesting. Where are we going with all of this? And meanwhile, Gwen is back on Miles's Earth, talks to his parents, and she's piecing together. He's on the wrong Earth because of the way that the tech works. Oh. She's piecing it together. She knows 2099 is wrong. Like he, and what he's doing, like his view on all of this, it's wrong. And so she decides she needs to go out and form her own group to try and save Miles. And you have this moment where it like reveals all the friends she's made, Spider-Punk, and then brings back everybody from the first movie that we hadn't seen. And then, of course, Peter B. Parker realizes, oh, crap, I've been on the wrong side. There's a little line in there where, like, I thought we were supposed to be heroes. And you realize the spider people are not being heroes. And so she's going to create her own team to try and save Miles and figure out what's going on with all this. And you see, like, oh, that's going to be so great. And then we go back and Miles is like talking to other Miles, like, we can save our dad. Like, why would I need want to save your dad on your Earth? Like this bitter, angry version of him. And like, all right, it's about to go down. To be continued. Harsh cliffhanger. Harsh ending. And it's this made it really tough for me to score this movie because I can score it on what you gave me, but it's only half of a story. And so I thought it was fantastic. So I'm scoring you based off that. But at the same time, if you drop the ball in the second half, do I reevaluate this much lower? It was tough because it's not a complete story. I would argue like Infinity War is a complete story. It's the story of who will get the Infinity Stones. Thanos got them. Thanos won. We lost. Endgame is a new story, which is how are we going to undo that? How are we going to save everyone that we lost? But those are two separate stories. They continue right after each other. They're deeply tied to one another. You get to the end of Infinity War, you go, I know this isn't going to end like this, but that is a complete story. Who will get the Infinity Stones? But with this movie, it's not as clear of a single journey here, of story. Of here's a conflict, here's the resolution. And you can make a little bit of an argument that there is in regards to Gwen Stacy and her kind of journey. If you view it from her perspective of her arc of the brokenness with her father that she's running and she has to go back, make amends, and try and do the right thing. Because she was rejected, she ran to anyone that would take her. She runs to this angry Spider-Man 2099 with this totalitarian worldview, philosophical view that feels out of place for spider people, but he's alone. And so she's alone, so she's drawn to the community there, even though that something's not quite right about it. And this community is saying, you can't go talk to that person you care about. You can't tell that person you care about that bad things are coming. You can't try and help that person. We don't want that person, but she herself needs community, needs a place to fit in. So she accepts this world, this group of people where something's not quite right. But that's true of all of the spider people. If you say that all of them are alone and in desperate need of community, all of them feel great loss and they're trying to get something back. So you have a bunch of spider people drawn to a community that's actually looks like very toxic, like something's not quite right. What would draw them to this guy that doesn't seem like he's got the mind of a Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Spider-Person? Because at least he's community. We're together. So you watch it from her story, not as Miles is the lead. Miles is the lead of this, both parts. But for part one, maybe our lead, our actual person with the arc and journey, is Gwen. And you watch her journey of running, finding community in a bad place, realizing she's betrayed one of the people that she cares about the most, and then returns to the person she was running from, makes amends, decides to do the right thing by the person that she cares so much about. Oh, okay. In that sense, there's a complete journey there. But on our overall story, I assumed there was like 30 minutes left in the film. And we're going to watch 30 minutes of this big showdown to see whether we are, will or will not save Miles' dad. And then whatever happens, we have our twist. But as this hard cliffhanger, I'm not sure how there's two more hours of this story. I'm not really sure. It felt like such an odd point to like cut it off right there. And I don't know what that story looks like. But I loved what they gave me. Make of that as you will. Certainly left me wanting the next movie immediately, but it is a hard cliffhanger. It is not, we told a complete story, and now here's another complete story that continues. We ended on it, told a complete story, but ended with a cliffhanger, teasing something that's next, teasing where things could go. This is an incomplete story. Maybe you have a complete art, but not a complete story. That's why I see a bunch of people like, it's a masterpiece, best comic book movie ever, best comic book sequel ever. Well, let's wait. I gotta see the other half before I'm slapping those labels on something. I can say I loved it. I can't say it's the best when it's incomplete. I gotta wait and see what happens with some of this stuff. So anyway, that's my take on it. Let me know your thoughts on it down below. Spoil away. Go into all the details. There's probably so much more I could have talked about, so much more that I missed, but I've only seen it once, and unfortunately, I couldn't see it a second time, and I won't be able to see it a second time for a little bit. So normally, I write all my notes after watching it once, and then I watch it a second time, and I can just fill in all these things. I have so many more details I can go into. Can't do that here. So anyway, rambling too long. Thank you so much for watching. Keep talking movies and TV too much. Bye-bye.